Welcome to the Gamesmith's Table Talk. This is a roundtable format discussion where I and my guests try to cover three tabletop role-playing related topics in 15 minutes. If you know anything about tabletop role players, then you'll know that this is an ambitious goal. Let's head to the table. Welcome back to our Table Talk podcast. I'm your host, Clayton the Gamesmith, and joining me are...
I'm Franklin.
I'm Cheryl.
I'm Clark.
Let's head to the table.
The views and opinions of the panel are their own and do not reflect the views and opinions of any other individual company or organization. This podcast has been known to be opinionated. You have been warned.
Welcome back, and we're going to be talking about metagaming next. Metagaming is when our characters are using knowledge that the players, have at the game table. Now, metagaming is often seen as a problem, can sometimes be seen as a boon. Let's talk about it.
Definitely seen as evil in a lot of places. We're talking about stuff like you're sitting around the table, two other characters are off doing something, but you can hear everything that they're doing, all the information that they're acquiring, etc., etc. Then it comes back, and then you use that information
when you
to inform what your character is doing.
But the character wasn't there to hear it.
Correct.
Yeah, that's a problem.
It is.
What we've kind of jumped on there is sort of the worst case version of metagaming. Oftentimes, I think this comes down to a maturity thing on the player's side. It can feed in from maturity issues elsewhere in their life, but generally it's younger, but less experienced players that are doing this because they haven't learned to separate their character from themselves just yet.
I think quite often I've seen it done completely by accident, not even with any kind of intention whatsoever. You come into, as a player sitting around a table, you come into knowledge of a situation that involves another character, and you automatically assume that your character knows that information. Whereas, like you said, your character's not there. So, I mean, that's a classic example of metagaming, which often happens without any
intention. The other example of this would be monsters that have, especially very common, very well-known weaknesses. Players just assuming that the characters know about those weaknesses.
Right.
Werewolves being vulnerable to silver weapons, for example. It would argue that most characters would know about that, but depending on their background, they might not. As a GM, I usually would adjudicate these sorts of things by calling for a knowledge roll, whatever the appropriate skill, and then going into some detail about what you know, what you don't know about, based on the result of their role. Your exact systems will have slightly different mechanisms of how much information to give.
Yeah, monsters are a big one. Any player that has played a lot, let's say a year, or just happens to sit down and read the beastery, they're going to know stuff about that monster that maybe their character shouldn't. If you've got a farmer, first level fighter, he's been on the farm his whole life, he may have heard stories of certain monsters, but that doesn't make all the information that he knows correct. But then they go into a combat situation and suddenly they know, oh, hey, skeletons, you need blunt weapons for. How would that character know that?
Exactly. Yeah, it should influence the character's knowledge. Like, I have a character who has a heavily influenced Fae background, and because of it, knows that Fae are susceptible to cold iron, yet not having that background, I would definitely want him to roll a knowledge nature, for example.
In the first edition, it would be knowledge nature is the appropriate skill.
Yeah, right. I mean, this is only a problem in so much as how much immersion you want at your game table. I mean, there are tables that this doesn't matter.
Yeah, we've talked about playstyles in previous episodes, and if you are running a much more tactical game, knowing what the monsters have as abilities available to them is an important part of the strategic and tactical elements of the game. And so you might be much more liberal of giving that information out to your players, if that's the style of table you're running. I did see an interesting video recently about changing up the way you build your monsters to create this sort of like a puzzle element to fights, where you go and you add a bunch of resistances, weaknesses to monsters to make knowledge skills much more relevant.
Second edition, for instance, is a lot more art than it is mechanics. You can run into a graveyard full of zombies and have six or seven different types of zombies that have different abilities, different weaknesses.
Yeah, as a GM, if I knew that I had players who were going to do things like look up monster stat bars outside of the game, I would probably go out of my way to make sure the monsters they're fighting are different from the ones that are in the book. I would take the base monster and I would change it. I would change its damage reduction to something else. I would give it an elemental vulnerability or immunity.
Absolutely.
That it doesn't have in the book.
I mean, we ran into a dragon, I believe it was a white dragon, that breathed fire.
Yes.
He used a spell to change his breath weapon, yeah.
All of our defenses were against the
presumed cold.
And suddenly we got fire and we had nothing against it. It shocked the heck out
of us. And this is, you know, a justification for what I was talking about earlier, that there are lots of monsters, dragons are a notable example, that are intelligent and absolutely would have an intimate understanding of their own strengths and weaknesses, and the tactics and strategies they use would be to cover their weaknesses or to change their weaknesses to something that the PCs wouldn't expect.
Mm-hmm. Even with character generation, playing against type or creating something that goes against the norm is kind of the popular thing. But there's also, from a nostalgic point of view, it's nice having a certain knowledge base about how monsters usually act, what they're resistant to, what abilities they have. And you could definitely throw a group off track by changing.
There is an element to metagaming where it's thing that your metagaming is permeating your culture. For example, if you're sitting around a table playing Star Wars, everybody playing Star Wars has probably seen every Star Wars movie. And your character is running on the assumption they know the events of every single scene in every single Star Wars movie or comic book or whatever. When it's like, I'm a farmer from Tatooine out in the Outer Rim, and I don't know nothing. Like, what's a Skywalker? What's a Death Star? What's a Rebel? I have no clue. Exactly. Yeah.
What those things. Empire's great.
Yeah. They bring food here.
Yeah.
And that's their primary recruiting tool, by the way, you guys. So just be careful of that. And so the players are arriving under the assumption that their characters already have all this information. So GMs need to be very clear and communicate to their players at the outset what their players will know and what they won't know.
Yes, that's absolutely true. But like I said, how much metagaming that goes on at your table is really a factor of what type of table you're playing at.
And I would say probably decreases over time, because if you have, as you have players that grow and mature as players, they will start metagaming less and less.
I will also say as a GM that there's a certain amount of metagaming that I depend on for my players to react a certain way. Most obviously at character generation. We're about to do this kind of campaign. This is the kind of character you're going to need. Well, I want to play an urban character. Well, that's not going to help you because we're going to be out in the boondocks the entire time. So you making an urban investigator will be useless for you. That's metagaming.
Yes, at character creation is the one spot where there will be a massive amount of metagaming, and it's
good.
Because you're trying to...
It's needed.
Yeah.
You go into, what type of skills is your character going to take, Franklin? I don't want to duplicate that, so I'll take these skills.
Players usually will go out of their way to not pick the same class or the same skills to avoid the stepping same on spells. Each other's toes to create a more well-rounded, well-balanced party. And that's absolutely a positive thing. I've had players express to me the frustrations of playing two characters in the same group that had very similar skill set and always feeling like they were stepping on each other's toes. Especially frustrating is when one character is slightly better at the skill set that the other character has. And so then the second character just feels useless because anytime they want to do something, the other character just does it and is better than them.
Another thing in character generation is not only skills, but the party composition. Like, a lot of times we've sat down and 3 out of 4 people immediately know what they want to play. And then the fourth one's like, okay, well, I'll wait until everyone's settled on what they're playing and I'll fill in the gap. Usually that gap is spellcasting.
Cleric.
Something like that. Or, okay, you're all playing backline characters. I guess we need a frontline character so that you guys don't get killed immediately. In that point, metagaming is necessary and important.
Mm-hmm.
Once you begin play, I feel the less you can do of it, the better. There's been plenty of times where Clayton, as the GM, has come right out and said something pertinent to the adventure that we're doing, knowing full well that nobody at the table is going to metagame that information. They're going to play it in character.
Yes. And that's a trust factor that has developed over time. I would never do that with a bunch of people I've never played with. And it's just like, you know, when we are sitting around and when we're not gaming or when we're doing some other activity, and it's like we're talking about the adventure and what the characters are doing and what's going to happen next. And I start ruminating about things that could happen in the far-flung future or what's happening parallel over here. I'm confident that when we return to the table, none of you are going to use that information to influence your character's actions.
Now, some people out there might think that, you know, you won't have fun if you're not using some metagaming while you're playing. And I will tell you, in my experience, it's the exact opposite. You know, having a character who has no clue about what's going on in a situation is a lot funner to play. Like, we have these three characters. They're triplets. And one is super knowledgeable, especially about anything to do with religion, planes, the whole nine yards. And the other two can rely on their brother for that information. So we had this one where he wasn't there, but the other two were facing, I think it was either a demon or, was it the succubus?
It depends which time you're talking about. Are you talking about in the Caden bar?
I think so. It was the succubus. The two that were there had no clue she was a succubus, had no clue what she was capable of.
Yes.
They just confronted her as they would any normal...
As a rogue and a fighter.
Yeah, and got totally owned. As players, we know what a succubus can do. And the second that Clayton described her transformation, we knew what we were facing. But it was a lot funner that the characters didn't know.
Yeah, we didn't act upon the information that yeah. we had.
And so then when our brothers showed up to save us, it was a lot
more dramatic.
And yeah, and they still talk about it in character many times after. So you can have a lot of fun with that. Where you may not have fun with that is if you go really deep into it and, you know, none of your characters would know anything about werewolves. You know, they howl at the moon and they eat people. That's what you know about werewolves. And then you get into a combat situation where the werewolves that you're fighting simply own you because none of you have anything that's silver. And then you get a party wipe. Maybe not so much fun. So I think there's like different degrees of when metagaming.
Yeah, I would say
it's important.
In the example that you're raising, I think it's important for the way the GM is setting up the adventure to make a point to build ways for the players to discover this information. If you know that your players are going to be running into werewolves, and the players know they're going to be running into werewolves, have some way, they find some dusty old tome in the local library that tells them a Cliff Notes version of what they're doing. Especially if you can put this at, say, the end of a small side quest, or they have to do something to find this information. So now they feel accomplished, they feel rewarded by having this knowledge, and are better equipped to go into the encounter.
And there should be an in-game explanation as to why their characters would have that knowledge, so that it obviously makes sense, right?
Yeah. Something that possibly interesting to do as well is, as a GM, make an effort to seed some deliberate misconceptions about different kinds of monsters. Having superstitions about how, say, zombies are particular to wooden weapons. There's absolutely no truth to this, but it's the sort of thing that might be a common superstition in the area that then gives a nasty surprise to your players when they suddenly find out it's not true. Or when you have someone in the group who actually has ranks in the relevant knowledge and knows that, no, that's just a superstition. Here's what we actually need to do.
Right, exactly. You have to have our player buy-in. And this is where metagaming becomes a thing. Because if you got that one player that insists on metagaming, his knowledge of it, where all of his character would know is this, then it may take away from the game itself. So just, once again, it comes down to talk, right? If you're in that situation and character, the player is metagaming, taking away from, you know, all this time and effort you put into seeding all these superstitions and stuff like that, and the other players are buying into it, and they're like, oh yeah, you know, that werewolf is, he's vulnerable to wood, and you got that one guy who's like, no, it's silver dudes. I'm going to stock up on silver weapons. But you come from the same area, you've heard the same things, why would you know any different? Then it's just a talk with the player.
One other thing I do want to bring up, that it seems like we're running out of time, so we'll have to roll this into the next episode. But there are, I would argue that there are circumstances where metagaming can be a positive thing, if done correctly, and actually add to the game experience. And that's when players are using skills that they have in the real world to make use of things to find solutions to problems that maybe the GM and the other players didn't think of. It can be dangerous, it can detract from the game, but I think if done correctly, it can be an interesting positive. But we'll leave that for next time.
Tune in to the next podcast and we'll continue the conversation on that.
We'll see you at the table.